And of course, what we all want to read right before lunch, a bunch of stuff about disease, due, and discharge. This section of Leviticus contains perhaps the most natural of the rules and regulations. This is quarantine law. How fitting, right? Who would figure we'd talk about quarantine law like it was not an old thing? It's widely accepted. This stuff is pretty obvious. It makes a great deal of sense. The people lived in close proximity, moving around in these tents. Disease could have spread very easily. They're packed in these little tents. Medicine was pretty ineffective. They don't have the means that we have with hospitals and healthcare. Disease could easily become deadly. Things that are preventable now were deadly then. This principle of quarantining and burning offered here were effective ways of stopping the spread of disease. There's a bit in here about masking, by the way. We'll get to it. But there are not only natural explanations for these regulations. Remember, we want a full view, spiritual and natural. There are spiritual ones too. This is consistent with what we've been saying about original sin. God does not like disease, and he wants to promote good health. God destroys disease in the new covenant, and what he's telling the people to do here by burning disease-ridden items is to destroy disease. Old Testament principle, New Testament principle, the same. God wants to destroy death, disease, sickness. The priest is given authority, like a physician, to diagnose and pronounce clean and unclean. Interesting foreshadowing of how Christ gets to pronounce clean and unclean. God is not good because he made good rules. I love this. I don't know if it makes any sense to you. God is not good because he made good rules. The rules are good because God made them. You understand? So God doesn't look around and say, I think it would be good for the people if they ate this way. No, God says, eat this way, and it's good because God said it. God says, I want you to live this way so you don't spread disease. He's not saying, I'll do a test, I'll do a study, and I'll figure out how best to stop it. No, God commands it, and that's the best way to stop disease. This kind of good health and hygiene naturally follow holiness. God's creation was good, and he wants to redeem it so. Then the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, when anyone has a swelling or a rash or a bright spot on his skin that may become an infectious skin disease, he must be brought to Aaron the priest or to one of his sons who is a priest. The priest is to examine the sore on his skin, and if the hair in the sore has turned white and the sore appears to be more than skin deep, it is an infectious skin disease. When the priest examines him, he shall pronounce him ceremonially unclean, not sin, unclean. If the spot on his skin is white but does not appear to be more than skin deep and the hair in it is not turned white, the priest is to put the infected person in isolation, quarantine, for 7 days. On the seventh day, the priest is to examine him, and if he sees that the sore is unchanged and is not spread in the skin, he is to keep him in isolation another 7 days. On the seventh day, the priest is to examine him again. If the sore has faded and has not spread in the skin, the priest shall pronounce him clean. It's only a rash. The man must wash his clothes and he will be clean. But if the rash does spread on his skin after he has shown himself to the priest to be pronounced clean, he must appear before the priest again. The priest is to examine, and if the rash is spread on the skin, he shall pronounce him unclean. It's an infectious disease. While the diseases and mildews described here were once translated, all of them, as leprosy, it's unlikely that that specific disease is being described. It's more likely that leprosy was meant as a catch-all term for any really destructive infection. It's kind of in the way that we use the word cancer, right? We look at the ashes and we say, oh, that cancer that's killing the ash trees. Well, they don't really have the disease cancer. It's become a catch-all for really nasty disease. And leprosy was the same way for them. Anything that was kind of a really nasty, destructive disease, they called leprosy as a catch-all term. It was not uncommon in the ancient Near East for the priests to perform the work of physicians. Sickness was thought to come as condemnation from the gods. So priests would intercede for the people and provide some type of mysticism for healing, like witch doctors, right? However, God does not prescribe any mystic healing rituals, but rather natural, observable, common practices of quarantining and removal of tainted things. God is pro-science. This The priests in Israel were not medicine men with secret powers. The instructions, actions, and rituals all throughout these chapters were open to the layperson, who in a sense could verify the diagnosis of the priest. They were not the possession of a religious elite, incomprehensible to anyone else. It is notable that in all these regulations, there is no attempt to manipulate a cure by magical or occult means, nor is there any mention of demonic causes. God is saying, this sickness, this mildew, this disease is not some judgment for a specific sin. It's just the broken state of the world. God instructs his people to use observable, rational, natural science in diagnosing and treating disease. This Old Testament principle is still true today. God, the great physician, grants healing through doctors using observable, rational, natural science. Since our Creator is unchanging, we can trust the laws and logic of our world to be predictable and diagnosable. When anyone has an infectious skin disease, he must be brought to the priest. The priest is to examine him. And if there is a white swelling in the skin that has turned the hair white, and if there is a raw flesh in the swelling, it is a chronic skin disease, and the priest shall pronounce him unclean. The skin disease described thus far might be psoriasis, a buildup of skin cells causing a scaly rash. It can be chronic, meaning there's no cure, coming and going throughout a person's lifetime. It is not very contagious, but could be passed to people living in the same household or in close proximity. Psoriasis can flare up because of other infections, like a cold or stress. So quarantining the patient would be a suitable treatment, allowing the rash to naturally subside when the cold passed or the stress reduced. When someone has a boil on his skin and it heals, and in the place where the boil was, a white swelling or reddish-white spot appears, he must present himself to the priest. The priest is to examine it, and if it appears to be more than skin deep and the hair in it has turned white, the priest shall pronounce him unclean. Notice that white skin, scars, or burns in this last section are not sufficient to merit uncleanness. Disease that is destructive or contagious is unclean, but harmless skin blemishes are not. God certainly cares about our physical health, but he does not share our worldly standards of beauty. Scars or burns or blemishes on the skin are not enough for you to be called unclean by God. Scars don't make you unclean in God's eyes. Christ himself in his resurrected body, we just had this a Sunday ago, had scars on his hands and his side. While the world might call these blemishes unclean, God sees them of no consequence. If a man or woman has a sore on his head or on the chin, the priest is to examine the sore. And if it appears to be more than skin deep and the hair in it is yellow and thin, the priest shall pronounce that person unclean. It's an itch, an infectious disease of the head or chin. The disease might be favus, a form of ringworm. Favus usually presents on the scalp in the form of yellow fungus. I did not have a lot of fun looking these up when I wrote this, with a hair in the middle. In its severe stages, it causes hair loss. It can be shared by members of the same household living in close proximity. The next disease, with white spots on the skin, might be leucoderma, a disease that causes skin to discolor. It is not contagious. When a man or woman has white spots on the skin, the priest is to examine them. And if the spots are dull white, it is a harmless rash that has broken out on the skin. That person is clean. When a man has lost his hair and is bald, he is clean. If he has lost his hair from the front of his scalp and has a bald forehead, he is clean. But if he has a reddish-white sore on his bald head or a forehead, it is an infectious disease breaking out on his head or forehead. The priest is to examine him, and if the swollen sore on his head or forehead is reddish-white, like an infectious disease, the man's is diseased and is unclean. And then it goes into a bit that might be leprosy here. The priest shall pronounce him unclean because of the sore on his head. The person with such an infectious disease must wear torn clothes, let his hair be unkempt, cover the lower part of his face, and cry out, "Unclean! Unclean!" As long as he has the infection, he remains unclean. He must live alone. He must live outside the camp. So that last description is leprosy proper. In this time period, it was incurable. Interesting, leprosy was long thought to be transmitted only by touch. So the people living during this time thought you could only get leprosy by touch. More recently, health professionals have discovered it is also transferred respiratorily. So God's prescription to cover the lower part of your face might be a form of masking that protects against respiratory transmission. Even before humans figured it out, God's law had the correct prescription. God knows more than any human health professional. Because of the deterioration accompanying leprosy, people of the time considered these patients walking dead. This is why they are instructed to mourn by wearing torn clothes, unkempt hair, and covering the face. And for the lepers, he suffered them not to come into the city at all, nor to live with any others, as if they were, in effect, dead persons. In a sense, he or she was virtually counted dead, since the disease had allowed death to invade a still living body and was condemned to a life of separation from both the community and the place of worship. It was a tragic condition. We do not read of any who died of the leprosy, but it rather buried them alive by rendering them unfit for conversation with any but such as were infected like themselves. So we're going to skip here to 14:1 through 32. To see the purification process for infected people, and then we'll come back to 13. So the way it's laid out actually in your Bibles, it goes infectious skin diseases, mildew, purification for infectious skin diseases, purification for mildew, and we're just going to put the two together. So diseases and their purification, mildew and their purification. The Lord said to Moses, "These are the regulations for the diseased person at the time of his ceremonial cleansing, when he is brought to the priest. The priest is to go outside the camp and examine him. If the person has been healed of this infectious skin disease, the priest shall order that two live clean birds and some cedar wood, scarlet yarn, and hyssop be brought for the one to be cleansed. Then the priest shall order that one of the birds be killed over a fresh water in a clay pot. He is then to take the live bird and dip it, together with the cedar wood, the scarlet yarn, and the hyssop, into the blood of the bird that was killed over the fresh water. 7 times he shall sprinkle the one to be cleansed of the infectious disease and pronounce him clean. He is to release the live bird in the open fields. The person to be cleansed must wash his clothes, shave off all his hair, and bathe with water, and then he will be ceremonially clean. After this, he may come into the camp, but he must stay outside his tent for 7 days. On the 7th day, he must shave off all his hair. He must shave his head, his beard, his eyebrows, and the rest of his hair. He must wash his clothes and bathe himself with water, and he will be clean. This ceremonial cleansing does not provide healing. This is not mystic healing. Rather, it occurs if the person has been healed. We've already stated that priests of Israel do not employ mysticism for healing. Rather, after quarantining has naturally caused the infection to subside, ceremonial cleansing takes place so the person can resume life and worship in the community. On the 8th day, he must bring 2 lambs and 1 ewe lamb, a year old, each without defect, along with 3/10 of an ephah of fine flour mixed with oil for a grain offering and 1 log of oil. The priest who pronounces him clean shall present both the one to be cleansed and his offerings before the Lord at the entrance to the tent of meeting. Then the priest is to take 1 of the male lambs and offer it as a guilt offering along with a log of oil. He shall wave them before the Lord as a wave offering. He is to slaughter the lamb in the holy place where the sin offering and the burnt offering are slaughtered. Like the sin offering, the guilt offering belongs to the priest. It is most holy. The priest is to take some of the blood and of the guilt offering and put it on the lobe of the right ear of the one to be cleansed, on the right thumb of his right hand, and the big toe of his right foot. The priest shall then take some of the log of oil, pour it in the palm of his own left hand, dip his right forefinger into the oil in his palm, and with his finger sprinkle some of it before the Lord 7 times. The priest is to put some of the oil remaining in his palm on the lobe of the right ear of the one to be cleansed, on the thumb of his right hand, and on the big toe of his right foot, on top of the blood of the guilt offering. So in the same place he just put the blood, he puts the oil. The rest of the oil in his palm the priest shall put on the head of the one to be cleansed and make atonement with him before the Lord. Pay attention to the order that these sacrifices occur. Remember, this individual has been kept outside the camp for a period of time, probably months, maybe years. Imagine the sacrifices as a re-entry ceremony. First, there is a ceremonial cleansing for their personal cleansing. Next, a guilt offering. Remember, guilt offering is neighbor to neighbor, offered for the sins against the people. Maybe their sickness was passed to someone. They felt guilty about that. Maybe they let down their family or their business partners over months they were away. Third, they approach the tabernacle and offer a sin offering. Remember, this is person to God. who they've longed to worship so many months. Fourth, there's a burnt offering, thankful for God's provision and healing. Last, a grain offering. They're restored to full fellowship in the community, and so they have a celebratory meal with their friends and family once again. Then the priest is to sacrifice the sin offering and make atonement for the one to be cleansed from his uncleanness. After that, the priest shall slaughter the burnt offering and offer it on the altar, together with the grain offering, and make atonement for him, and he will be clean. Here are two reminders. This sin offering does not imply that the person sinned by being sick. Instead, it is to acknowledge and atone for the sins committed while the person was away from regular worship. God provides easy access. Another reminder, removing financial barriers from reconciliation. Here it is. If, however, he is poor and cannot afford these, he must take one male lamb as a guilt offering to be waved to make atonement for him, together with a tenth of an ephah of fine flour mixed with oil for a grain offering, a log of oil, and two doves or two young pigeons, which he can afford, one for a sin offering and the other for a burnt offering. On the eighth day, he must bring them for his cleansing to the priests at the entrance of the tent of meeting before the Lord. The priest is to take the lamb for the guilt offering together with the log of oil and wave them before the Lord as a wave offering. He shall slaughter the lamb for the guilt offering and take some of its blood and put it on the lobe of the right ear of the one to be cleansed, the thumb of his right hand and the toe of his right foot. The priest is to pour some of the oil into the palm of his left hand, same as before, and with his right forefinger sprinkle some of the oil from his palm seven times before the Lord. Some of the oil in his palm he is to put on the same places he put the blood of the guilt offering, on the lobe of the right ear of the one to be cleansed, on the thumb of his right hand, and on the big toe of his right foot. If it sounds like the purification process, whether you offer the expensive offering or the cheap offering, is the same, it's because they are. You don't get any less of a cleansing, any less of a purification if you offer the smaller offering. You get the same process. God sees you the same, no matter what you offer. So now we'll jump back into Leviticus 13 to get the disease, the mildew stuff in the house. The word sara'at, translated mildew, is the same word earlier translated disease. While it literally means leprosy, like we said, broadly applied here as a general term for destructive infections. Like we said about using kind of cancer, like that's cancerous, it gets in stuff. Well, it's not actually cancer, but it's just a way that we describe it. The same for leprosy or sara'at here. If any clothing is contaminated with mildew, any woolen or linen clothing, any woven or knitted material, or any linen or wool, any leather or anything made of leather, and if the contamination in the clothing or leather or woven or knitted material or any leather article is greenish or reddish, it is a spreading mildew and must be shown to the priest. The priest is to examine the mildew and isolate the affected article for 7 days. On the seventh day, he is to examine it, and if the mildew has spread in the clothing or the woven or knitted material or the leather, whatever its use, it is a destructive mildew. The article is unclean. He must burn up the clothing or the woven or knitted material of wool or linen or any leather article that has the contamination in it, because the mildew is destructive. The article must be burned up. But if when the priest examines it, the mildew has not spread in the clothing, or the woven or knitted material, or the leather article, he shall order that the contaminated article be washed. Then he is to isolate it for another 7 days after the affected article has been washed. The priest is to examine it, and if the mildew has not changed its appearance, even though it has not spread, it's still unclean. Burn it with fire, whether the mildew has affected one side or the other, doesn't matter. If when the priest examines it, the mildew has faded after the article has been washed, he is to tear the contaminated part out of the clothing or the leather or the woven or knitted material. But if it reappears in the clothing or in the woven or knitted material or in the leather article, it is spreading, and whatever has the mildew must be burned with fire. The clothing or the woven or knitted material or any leather article has been washed and is rid of the mildew must be washed again, and it will be clean. These are the regulations concerning contamination by mildew in woolen or linen clothing, woven or knitted material, or any leather article for pronouncing them clean or unclean. Notice, when a person had a spreading disease, they're not burned. They're quarantined. Even in the worst case where they have a chronic disease that's contaminated, they are not burned or killed. They just live outside the camp. People are promoted way high above material things. Material things matter very little to God. If it's going to cause disease and destruction, just burn it, right? people don't get that same condemnation because God has a high view of his image bearers. Here's a spiritual understanding of this principle. To remain a part of the fabric of God's people, you had to be clean and spotless. To be dirty or corrupted meant being cut off and cast away. We have language like this in Psalm 1, where the wicked are not part of the tree, but like chaff, they're blown away. In the New Testament, the New Covenant affirms the same principle. In John 15, Christ invites his people to be part of the vine, but cuts off those who are not found in him. So now we're going to skip back to the end of Leviticus 14, because now we get the purification for that stuff we just talked about. The Lord said to Moses and Aaron, "When you enter the land of Canaan, which I am giving you as your possession, and I put a spreading mildew in a house in that land, the owner of the house must go and tell the priest, 'I have seen something that looks like mildew in my house.'" Very matter-of-factly like that. God says, "I put spreading mildew in a house." Ooh, this is a statement on the sovereignty of God. Nothing happens apart from his purpose and will, not even mildew in your house or a hair falling from your head, right? Consider Job, whose trials and tribulations came about for the glory of God. This would also have been a striking comment to the Israelites' ears. When they enter the promised land, flowing with milk and honey, there will still be taints of sin. Thanks be to God that the promised land in the new covenant is far greater. Our promised home will have no sickness, sorrow, or pain. The priest is to order the house to be emptied before he goes in to examine the mildew, so that nothing in the house will be pronounced unclean. After the priest is to go in and inspect the house, he is to examine the mildew on the walls, and if it has a greenish or reddish depressions that appear to be deeper than the surface of the wall, the priest shall go out of the doorway of the house and close it up 7 days. On the seventh day, the priest shall return to inspect the house. If the mildew has spread on the walls, he is to order that the contaminated stones be thrown out and thrown into an unclean place outside the town. He must have all the inside walls of the house scraped, and the material that is scraped off dumped into an unclean place outside the town. Then they are to take other stones and replace these, and take new clay and plaster the house. Here is another spiritual understanding of this law. Christ was the stone once rejected, who took our infirmities that we might be pronounced clean. If the mildew appears in the house after the stones have been torn out and the house scraped and plastered, the priest is to go and examine it. And if the mildew has spread in the house, it is a destructive mildew. The house is unclean. It must be torn down. Its stones, timbers, and all the plaster taken out of the town to an unclean place. Anyone who goes into the house while it is closed up will be unclean till evening. Anyone who sleeps or eats in the house must wash his clothes. But if the priest comes to examine it and the mildew has not spread after the house has been plastered, he shall pronounce the house clean because the mildew is gone. To purify the house, he is to take two birds and some cedar wood, scarlet yarn, and hyssop. He shall kill one of the two birds, and then you're reminded what we just read about the purification process. The purification for mildew is the same as the purification for disease. These are the regulations for any infectious skin disease, for an itch, for mildew in clothing or in a house, and for a swelling, a rash, or a bright spot to determine when something is clean or unclean. These are the regulations for infectious skin diseases and mildew. The next set of rules will deal with discharges from male and female sexual organs. It's worth restating yet again that sex in and of itself is not sinful. These are consequences. There are consequences, however, on fallen humanity in general. Here, as throughout these chapters on various kinds of uncleanness, we must keep in mind that uncleanness was not in itself a matter of sin, though it could be associated with sinful acts. This chapter includes forms of uncleanness that arose from perfectly legitimate actions or normal functions. The Lord said to Moses and Aaron, "Speak to the Israelites and say to them, 'When any man has a bodily discharge, the discharge is unclean. Whether it continues flowing from his body or is blocked, it will make him unclean. This is how his discharge will bring about uncleanness. Any bed the man with the discharge lies on will be unclean, and anything he sits on will be unclean. Anyone who touches his bed must wash his clothes and bathe with water, and he will be unclean till evening. Whoever sits on anything that the man with a discharge sat on must wash his clothes and bathe with water, and he will be unclean till evening. Whoever touches the man who has a discharge must wash his clothes and bathe with water, and he will be unclean till evening. If the man with the discharge spits on someone who is clean, that's not very nice. The person must wash his clothes and bathe with water, and he will be unclean till evening. Everything the man sits on when riding will be unclean, and whoever touches any of the things that were under him will be unclean till evening. Whoever picks up those things must wash his clothes and bathe with water, and he will be unclean till evening. Anyone the man with a discharge touches without rinsing his hands with water must wash his clothes and bathe with water, and he will be unclean till evening. A clay pot that the man touches must be broken, and any wooden article is to be rinsed with water. When a man is cleansed from his discharge, he is to count off 7 days from his ceremonial cleansing. For his ceremonial cleansing, he must wash his clothes and bathe himself with fresh water, and he will be clean. On the eighth day, he must take 2 doves or 2 young pigeons and come before the Lord to the entrance of the tent of meeting and give them to the priest. The priest is to sacrifice them, the one for a sin offering and the other for a burnt offering. In this way, he will make atonement before the Lord for the man because of his discharge. This first rule is for male discharges, probably gonorrhea, which causes discharge from the male organ lasting as long as several months. When a man has an emission of semen, he must bathe his whole body with water, and he will be unclean till evening. Any clothing or leather that has semen on it will be washed with water, and he will be unclean till evening. When a man lies with a woman and there is an emission of semen, both must bathe with water, and they will be unclean till evening. Men and women are dealt with equally in these scenarios. Just like both the man and woman are unclean due to period blood, here both the man and woman are unclean due to the male's emission of semen. When a woman has a regular flow of blood, the impurity of her monthly period will last 7 days, and anyone who touches her will be unclean till evening. Anything she lies on during her period will be unclean, and anything she sits on will be unclean. Whoever touches her bed must wash his clothes and bathe with water, and he will be unclean till evening. Whoever touches anything she sits on must wash his clothes and bathe with water, and he will be unclean till evening. Whether it is the bed or anything she was sitting on, when anyone touches it, he will be unclean till evening. If a man lies with her and her monthly flow touches him, he will be unclean for 7 days. Any bed he lies on will be unclean. This law, like the ones concerning childbirth, provides some natural protection for the women during their period. For 7 days, they are excused from sexual activity, extending through the woman's entire period. This protected women from being treated as objects for pleasure, even during times of discomfort. The monthly flow touching the man is probably accidental on the first day of the period, before it was clearly known. This is forbidden in Leviticus 18:19, Leviticus 20:18, and Ezekiel 8:6. Cook provides a funny play on words in his commentary, which I am sharing with you. Intercourse during the acknowledged period was a heavy crime and was to be punished by cutting off. So there you go. When a woman has a discharge of blood for many days at a time, other than her monthly period, or has a discharge that continues beyond her period, she will be unclean as long as she has the discharge, just as in the days of her period. Any bed she lies on while her discharge continues will be unclean, as is her bed during her monthly period, and anything she sits on will be unclean as during her period. Whoever touches them will be unclean. He must wash his clothes and bathe with water. He will be unclean the customary till evening. When she is cleansed from her discharge, she must count off 7 days, and after that she will be ceremonially clean. On the eighth day, she must take 2 doves and 2 young pigeons and bring them to the priest at the entrance of the tent of meeting. The priest is to sacrifice one for sin offering, the other for a burnt offering, the same way the man did. In this way, he will make atonement for her before the Lord for the uncleanness of her discharge. Such a case was presented to Jesus in Luke 8:42-48, when a woman who had been bleeding for 12 years touched Jesus. By the rule of the law, Jesus should have become unclean. Remember, holiness is transferable, for whoever touches them will be unclean. But a remarkable thing happens. She doesn't transfer her uncleanness, but instead Jesus transfers his holiness, and she's healed. We're reminded, holiness is from God. It is impossible for us to change God. We cannot make him unclean. We're also reminded, uncleanness will not persist in God's presence. It will necessarily be destroyed, for God is only holy, holy, holy. We see once again that Jesus is a better high priest. While the high priest of the old covenant could only pronounce clean and unclean by what he observed in the natural, Christ has the ability to make clean what he alone can observe, both in the natural and spiritual. He heals diseases and forgives sins. You must keep the Israelites separate from things that make them unclean, so they will not die in their uncleanness for defiling my dwelling place, which is among them. Tabernacle. Remember, this is in the context of Exodus. Once again, we find not abolishment of the Levitical law, but fulfillment. Since we have the Holy Spirit not in a tabernacle made by human hands, but in our very hearts, we now protect our bodies from sin and disease with the same fervor as the Israelites in the Old Covenant. In the New Covenant, you honor God with your body. You offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. And those who cleanse themselves from the common will be instruments of special purposes, made holy, useful to the master, and prepared to do any good work. These are the regulations for a man with a discharge, for any made unclean by an emission of semen, for a woman in her monthly period, for a man or a woman with a discharge, and for a man who lies with a woman who is ceremonially unclean, who's hungry.